This is where we break through the traumas and the mental illnesses that are holding amazing parents back from their dream family life. You can find more resources at WandaHoward.com. Thanks for joining us, and let's get started. Welcome back, everybody, to the Successful Parents Podcast. I am your host, Wanda Howard, and because we're going to be doing things a little bit differently for the next few episodes, my daughter isn't here with me, but I'm excited for what we have. So we're also going to be switching it up even more on you, and I'm going to be turning the reins over to my guest to be interviewing me more. So I have back with us Douglas Richens, and we're going to be going through this journey together. So please, as I tell my side of my story, please fill yourself in. I want you to be able to find yourself in my story, where you're at, this whole project, and why I'm interviewing Douglas in the first place, and why he's interviewing me today, is we really want to be able to shed a light on what therapy is and what coaching is and how it can help, and that we don't have to settle for a mediocre life or a hard internal world, that there is help, there is resources. So that's what we're here about today. So welcome, Douglas. Let's get this going.
Thank you. It's good to be with you. Are you ready for this?
I think so. I have a whole list right here of all the reasons why I need therapy. So this is
You are so awesome. You know, we've had some beautiful conversations over the last 2 or 3 weeks. And you've been so good. You've been thoughtful. You've been honest. You've been open. That vulnerability is what allows our brain to change, right? We rewire ourselves in the space of kindness or in the space of tragedy. And in the space that you are at right now with your beautiful family and your desires to work on self, it's just really, really positive to see. I'm going to steer you into something you weren't planning on. You ready?
Okay, let's do it.
So for those who are listening, Wanda and I have talked about her journey in life, her upbringing. The life she is living is a dream come true. And it is so beautiful to see where you came from and the good and the difficult and the way you've engineered and designed this space, this family, and this lifestyle. So I want to ask you about coping mechanisms. You are a talented, smart individual. You've also got a house full of kids and a husband that's doing this and that and busy. And you're in your community. You're in the stress of the church world, the neighborhood world. You're a sister. You're wearing all these different roles and hats. And each of them creates push and pull in your life. And when you get too many of those pushing and pulling all at once, you have to cope. Yep. You have to find a way to get through it in a successful way. So I wanted to ask you to tell me and share with me some of the ways that you are coping with your stress, your anxiety, when it kind of bubbles up. And let's just talk about if that's helpful, if that's working for you, or maybe some of it's an old pattern that's not serving you anymore. So
yeah,
tell me about that space in your life.
Well, so first, where I used to be was I was very depressed. I was very suicidal. So depressed that like getting out of bed wasn't really an option. I pretty much stayed at home in pajamas and fed my baby, and we just slept all day, every day, and I just didn't do anything. And I didn't know at that time that it was possible to go through a day without just wishing you didn't exist anymore. I didn't know that. I thought everybody dealt with suicidal thoughts. I didn't know that that was not normal. And after getting out of that space, it's really helped me to now realize that coping mechanisms do work, because in that space, it just didn't feel like anything worked. And when people would talk about coping mechanisms, it was so frustrating because I'm like, I don't need to cope. I need to not die. I need to get out of this. And so for those listening, if that's a frustration for you, it's real. And I do get that part too. But so now the space that I'm in is, like you said, I live a life that is a fairy tale to me. It's beyond amazing what I have now. And I am truly grateful for it. But there are still times where anxiety hits and still times where just the doubt and the fear and past traumas and things come up. And so in those moments, now, honestly, always the biggest one has been for me is prayer, is being able to know that God is there and that he does hear me. He does hear all of us. He does know what we're going through. But I also know how frustrating that just having prayer can feel, because it's not, you're in a way, you're reaching outside of yourself for peace again. At least that's how I approached prayer for a long time, is reaching out towards God for him to fix something within me. And it doesn't give you a lot of inner tools to work with. So some of the things now that have helped is breathing. Breathing is a huge one. Focusing on the five senses of what can I smell? What can I see? What can I hear? And that's always just, it's reassuring, because when I'm in anxiety attack mode, I feel like I'm under attack. I feel like the world is ending. And so just those five senses really is a great way for me to remind my senses that I'm not going to die. I am in a safe place now and the world is okay. But if you're not in a safe place, like there was times where I would try to use that and I literally was not in a safe place. And that was not the thing to do at that moment. Like it was okay to get out of there first. So, and then another, a huge one for me, honestly, too, is a lot of the anxiety or different things that I have is around my choices. Am I making the right choices? Was that the right call? Was that the right spiritual inspiration? Did I act on that accordingly or the best of my ability? And the one for that is actually, I call it founding myself on truth, being able to move forward on truth, in that it's a formula, I guess, that I came up with on my own is what I can say, but I really don't feel like I can take credit for it. It is something that God helped me find and helped me understand. But it's just a formula of being able to understand how I'm making decisions and if it meets all of the three pillars of truth, I guess. Those are the...
One of my dear friends, he has a very similar approach, and it's healthy. It's successful. He talks about being on path and on purpose.
Yeah.
And on truth would be the third little wing of that we would add, right? On path, on purpose, and on my truth is a beautiful way. So every coping mechanism you've listed are positive, are supportive. Now go ahead and list the ones that are toxic that happen.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. There's probably some that I'm going to not even think of.
Yeah, keep it rated G.
But some of the unhealthy ones, I guess, is one is blaming myself, especially. Mm-hmm. I don't typically blame other people, but I will blame myself up and down and all the time about the littlest things. If there's a problem, then my job is to fix it. And if it's not fixed, I can't depend on another person to fix it. I should be able to figure out how to fix this. And so, yeah, it's that one, definitely not healthy. Another one that I have heard has helped people, but was terrible and hard for me. And I wish that somebody had told me before, it's okay if a coping mechanism doesn't work for you. Cause I felt like I was totally broken when this coping mechanism did not work for me. But a therapist had told me that when, like, I'm dealing with my kids and a trigger comes up and I need to be able to help my kids, what I'm going to do is put what I'm experiencing and what I'm needing and put it inside a, he had me pick the container that I was using. So it was a glass jar with a lid on it. He's like, put it in the glass jar, put it up at the top of the closet and just leave it there. Go and attend to your kid and then you can come back to it later. But the problem with that is just putting it into that jar felt like another flood of anxiety because I didn't know how to get it back out. And I didn't know what was going to happen when, like, how long do I leave it there? And so it wasn't for me. It didn't work. But I would say another coping mechanism that's unhealthy is digging too deep into trying to figure out why. I think at times that can be helpful to see if, why did this happen? What could I have done better? But eventually you have to just be able to move on and let it go. And I think there's kind of an adrenaline rush that comes with, if you ask yourself, why did this happen? And you find, like, you're able to decipher, oh, this happened because of this reason. That's almost exciting. Like you found a little treasure. And so there's, at least for me, there's like this alluring idea of, if I keep digging, what else will I find? But usually I just end up driving myself crazy of, I can't figure out what's wrong and not able to move forward.
Okay. Well, those are three big ones. Let's take a swing at a couple of these, and none of these are in and of themselves. I mean, they're just normal. I mean, this is where the brain goes, right? The prime directive of the brain is to keep you alive and to lead you to a partner to reproduce. When children are there, the other prime directives of the brain kick in to keep those children safe. And so, you know, this idea of blaming, super normal. You're right. It's not helpful. Right. And I'm going to give you a little tool here that's going to wipe that away in 5 seconds and you'll love it. Okay.
Oh.
The advice from the therapist to take your problem, put it in a jar, put that jar in a cupboard and lock it, lock that room and then close the house and like all those layers. Right. If you look in the background of my office, right back here, there's a little wicker basket with a little pointed lid. I got that in the country of Ghana. In every home in Ghana, the mother has a little basket like that. It's called a worry basket. There's this beautiful tradition there that moms can swallow up everybody's worry. And if you have a worry, you put it in that basket and mom puts the lid on it and it's gone. And it is such a fun tradition. It's also, you know, maybe not as effective as other ways to deal with your worries. So this idea of putting your problems in a jar, that's only half of the solution, right? Putting your problems in a little basket and giving it to mom, it's only half of what the coping mechanism is. So we can fill in the other half. And chasing cause, this other one of digging too deep. This is we've talked about how flawed it is to try to chase cause, to try to figure out what caused what that led us to the space we're in. It's a very cognitive behavior modality. Our society is hardwired to think that in order to get out of pain, we have to know what caused it. And actually, we don't. We can reassign meaning to our pain. We can choose the direction we want our attention to go and what things mean. And we can be right or wrong. We can be, you know, we can practice acceptance. We can practice the accepting the unknown. Whenever we chase cause, we lose. Okay, you're trying to outrun something. There's no way you can win. It's subjective.
Mm-hmm.
So if we were in a longer coaching session, right, we would I would encourage you to try to chase cause on a couple things, and we would illustrate for you the futility of that exercise. And we would coach and we would practice how we don't chase cause. But here's the magic. One of those sweet insights that help a lot of people. You mentioned the word trigger. We want to put that in this negative light, right? We're cooking dinner with our family. This is going on. The phone rings. We look at the phone and it's that family member that drives us nuts, and boom, there's a trigger, right? And like, oh, I don't want to talk to that person. What if the trigger was a gift? What if when that hit comes, instead of it being pain, instead of it being stress, anxiety, it was gratitude and this appreciation for your old friend, that emotional trigger. If I were with you in person and I were to hand you a beautifully wrapped gift, you would open it, right? For a trigger to be a gift and for you to bristle, embrace, and push away from it, that usually leads to a less than helpful coping mechanism. But when that trigger comes and you're like, there you are again, I'm going to open you up. And we use our noticing brain instead of our thinking brain. And by opening up that trigger, we ask ourselves some questions about that trigger. And we just notice how our emotions changed. Did our heart rate go up? Are we breathing different? And we don't fight it. We don't have to repair it. We don't have to fight, you know, re-engineer our space. We don't have to go straight to deep breathing or straight to prayer or any of those. We can just notice it. For you as a parent, you give gifts to your kids and you've discovered the joy of watching people open gifts, which is so much more fun than receiving anything, right? Because you're noticing the connection between the object, the gift, and the person. And this is what I'm inviting you to do for yourself. When this trigger, I know some of those triggers in your life, but whichever one comes up, you recognize it as a gift and you open it, you draw closer to it, you notice it, and you notice the emotional state. And then you're back to choice. You're in control of the impact of that trigger. Now, I don't want to minimize this for anyone out there, because some of those triggers are huge and this takes some work.
Yeah.
But in short order, we can make a lot of progress there. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. And I like the imagery of it. I like the idea of it. I feel like to a degree, I do that. I'm not one to usually shy away from a challenge. As soon as something comes up, I want to understand what's happening and I want to look at it and I want to know, and because I want to change. I think.
So remember a few weeks ago when you called me and you had hit a big trigger.
Mm-hmm.
And you had separated yourself from your family. You took the car. You went out. You were parked in a parking lot under a shady tree calling me.
Mm-hmm.
And I took you through some exercises to really notice things as they really are. And we did some exercises of you know, emotional regulation. We took the time for mental emotional release around some elements of what was going on. In the thick of it, though, when it hits hard, this has to be a muscle memory kind of behavior. It can't happen up here. You can't rely on the cognitive to see the trigger as a gift. It has to be with time and practice deeply embedded in your belief system, and there's a gentle acceptance of it.
And I think that's the part where I struggle, is because there's the cognitive part of my brain that's like, okay, I notice it, I see it there.
Yeah.
And let's, like, don't hate yourself and all the good feelings, but I'm freaking out inside and I'm starting to like hyperventilate. And I, like, that day that I called you, I remember thinking, I don't want to be anxious right now. I don't want any of these hard things. I just want to be able to talk to people and ask them what's going on in their life and focus on everyone else. I don't want to focus on me. And, but it wasn't going away. And the more that I did that, the more the anxiety rose. So that's the part where I think is my cognitive brain wants to say, okay, look at it, you see it, now let's fix it. And there isn't very much of that space of just accepting and allowing and like being okay with it. It's terrifying to not know, like, how long will this go on and when will it stop and how do I get out of it? And so all of those. So yes, that's the part that I'm very interested in learning how to get better at.
So you made amazing progress that day. You, in all the humility, you acknowledged, you did accept, and you moved into the trigger and allowed yourself to see things differently, you know, and we guided you through that. And we created new meaning around those issues. And I loved when we talked a couple of weeks after that, and you're like, that issue isn't bothering me anymore.
Yeah.
Right? Because it was unconscious mind. It was gentle, but it was your deeper you regenerating a new system, a new wiring around those events. You, in that moment though, right, you drove away. You isolated yourself, all coping mechanisms. You called a friend, you called a therapist, right? Coping. Like, you did a lot of great things. Other people could have steered themselves to the local bar, right? And it could have just like cascaded down a pathway of toxicity.
Yeah.
And so you are doing great. You've got the good skills, right? And then as these less than helpful ones come up, we chip away at those and just make a little adjustments here and there.
Awesome.
And pretty soon you become this person that can just really deal with whatever, come what may. Everybody has a brain that is trying to keep them safe. And old coping mechanisms that worked in our youth or worked at a different season of our life, circumstances change. You're a mother now. You have, you know, you can't just like use some of the old coping mechanisms. Life moves on. And so it's just about learning new ones.
Yeah.
Better ones.
That's a lot more hopeful than just feeling like, dang it, I've been doing this wrong for so long. And if I've been doing it wrong for so long, then how am I ever going to get it right? But kind of acknowledging it and thanking what you've had before to help you get to where you are. So now you can use and utilize new skills. That's going to get you further.
Join us next week for part 2 of this podcast. Thank you again for being a part of our podcast family and for the difference you are making right now in the world and in the walls of your own home. If you're wanting to support parents everywhere, you can do that by leaving a rate and review. This helps so many find connection and answers they are searching for. Also, don't forget to go to wandahoward.com and get your own free parenting blueprint. I love you all, and we will see you next time.